Okay, thank you. So I was thinking you can also interrupt me if you have questions. I mean, be happy to clarification question or any other question. So you don't have to wait until the end. Okay, so as was mentioned, this is a paper on corruption and politicians. It's a paper joint with Romilda Cagnette, Pepita Miquel, and Karin van der Straten in Toulouse. Okay, so let me jump directly into the... I mean, I don't think I need to convince you that corruption is a problem for economic and social development. There's a fairly large literature. And people often mention that electoral democracy, you know, electing politicians might actually help tackle corruption or at least reduce corruption because of the competition and the potential entry of candidates and so on. And yet, I mean, there seems to be evidence that this is not always enough. And in particular, something that we see, and that's in a sense the starting point of this project. I actually lived in Paraguay for 10 years before being a researcher, and I still go back there as well as in other countries around the world, and you see time and time again, you know, big corruption scandals. You see these politicians being exposed, news coming out in the newspaper, and that's the case in particular in Paraguay, and then people are, you know, very vocal against corruption, and then the election comes 1 year later, 6 months later, 2 years later, and these guys get re-elected. And then you wonder what happens. Right? A couple of years ago, the Pope went to Paraguay, and you know, he made a big story about young people. You should really say something against corruption. You should not re-elect these guys. 1 year later, there was an election, and most of them got re-elected. So that's kind of the question that we ask. So there might be different reasons why this happened. Okay, one is the fact that maybe political institutions, you know, democracy is a vague word, but maybe political institutions are not good enough. They don't provide the right incentives. Maybe people would like to not vote for these guys, these corrupt politicians, but you know, it's costly. That means that they have to abandon their party, and they have family ties to this party. So one thing is really what's the political system that you face, and is it giving the right incentive? The other one, and there's a literature on that, is information. You know, maybe people just don't have information. I mean, it doesn't seem to fit the story that I was just telling, but you know, in some case, maybe people just don't have the right information. They don't rank corrupt politician in the right way and so on. So what we do in this paper is really set up a small model to understand what happens, and then test this through an experiment. And we test a combination of these more open electoral institutions that may allow people to punish politicians on the one hand, and better information on these corruption cases. And we do that in Paraguay because it's a country we know well, and it's also a country that, you know, it's in a sense a perfect testing ground, high level of corruption, and we're going to focus on one specific aspect, which is proportional elections, and specifically the fact that in many cases, and that's the case in Paraguay, people vote on proportional lists that are blocked. So they have to vote for a party, there's a list of people there, there's an order, you know, and these guys enter according to the order on the list that is not chosen by voters. And there have been discussions, not only in Paraguay, but in particular there, that, you know, maybe opening the list, so allowing people to choose within the list, might make it easier for them to actually punish the people they perceive to be corrupt and choose the good candidates. Okay, so that's basically what we're doing in this experiment. So we developed this model. I'm going to go through this quite quickly to guide our test. And then we do this survey experiment where we have people voting on the two modalities, the blocked list modality, proportional list with a blocked list of people in an order that cannot be changed, and then an open one where they can erase some name if they want. And then we combine that with another intervention where we actually provide information on a big corruption scandal. So that's yes.
Are these actual politicians or are they fictional?
Yes, so I'm going to say that in more detail, but they're going to vote on exactly the same politicians that were up for election 2 years before. So these are actual politicians with the same list, same order, etc. Let me skip the result and keep a little bit of suspense until the end, and also save time. So here's the model. Okay, so we can have closed list or open list. Just a reminder in case it's not clear. In closed list, that's this one. So you need to elect a number of member of parliament. You can vote for a party or abstain. And seats are allocated in proportion to the vote share of this party. Okay, so that's standard, and that's true for both open and closed list. In closed list, you cannot choose the people among the list, you just vote for a list. Within the party, the seats are allocated depending on the initial ranking on the list, and that's something that doesn't change. And here are a few countries that actually have a system like that, including Paraguay, the House in Spain, Argentina, etc. In open list, it's the same, you vote for a party or you abstain. I mean, most systems, there are some more exotic systems, of course, out there, but this would be the mainstream open list type of system. And then you can also vote for some candidate on the list. So this could be a positive vote where you choose some of them, or it could be a negative one where you erase some name. I mean, there's some variation there. And then within parties, the seats are allocated to the candidates depending on how they were ranked by voters. So within the list, those who get more votes would kind of rise in the list and the other guys would go down. Okay, so you can alter the order in which people enter. And there are a few countries that do something like that. Again, I mean, there are many different systems if you look into the details. In our experiment, we will allow people to choose any subset of people within the list. So the standard argument in favor of open list PR is that people can punish bad candidates while still voting for their party. Okay, that's what we really want to know whether that has some bite on the outcome of the election. So I mean there are other issues, but let me skip that. We're really looking at the within list thing, okay? Because time is short, and if there are questions or discussion, we can come back to these things. So just focus on this. So there's a number of parties, 1 to L, that each of them have a list of candidates. And we assume people are voting expressively, so they just vote for the candidates they like, because there's no strategic voting in this model. If they abstain, they get zero, and then they get a utility from voting for a party which is composed of two things. One is the value, the subjective value of the party, so they attach a value to each party, okay, which is something we see generally, people like or dislike certain parties, and then they also attach a value to the candidates on the list. Okay, so this QCL is the value of candidate C in list L, and it can be positive if the voter likes the candidate, or it can be negative. Okay, and that doesn't change. That's the background. So I have a value for each party, I have a value for each candidate. If I don't have information, I don't know anything, Q is going to be zero, for example. If I dislike the person, it's negative. Now, under closed list, the utility I get from voting for a list is simply the value that I get from voting for this party, plus a weighted, with a coefficient here, plus the sum of the value I attach to each of the candidates. Okay, so that's a simple one, simple thing. And the open list, in turn, I can choose to downgrade some of the candidates and upgrade some of them. And so that changes the value I attach to these different sets of candidates. So if I vote for some candidates, I still get the party value plus the value of these candidates, but with a higher weight here. Okay. because they are more likely to be up in the list. And then if I vote against another set of candidates, I get the sum of these, the value attached to them, with another weight here that is going to be lower. Okay. So that's just a difference. So I, in a sense, I'm just changing the weights in my utility that I attach to each candidate by voting for or against them. Okay. And then I choose the list which provides the highest utility if this is positive, or I abstain otherwise. And okay, so then let me just go. So the maximum utility that I get under open list will be given by this. Okay, so I get again the value from the positive candidates plus the value from the negative candidates here. So a few remarks. Okay, taking the list choice as given, opening the list will always benefit candidates that I value positively and hurt candidates I value negatively. I just vote for the ones that I like and I vote against the one I dislike. I think that's quite obvious. And that's kind of the thinking behind the opening of the list. You know, people think, okay, I mean, people are going to dislike corrupt candidates, they're going to vote against them. But that's, in fact, an open question, you know, and that I'm raising this point because this is really one of the surprising findings we have in this paper, is that, in fact, we don't know what people's preferences are. You know, we assume that, well, they should dislike corrupt candidates, and if they get information on the fact that they're corrupt, they should attach a negative way to them and vote against them. But we don't know if that's the case. We don't know people's preferences. Okay. So now, we can have a few key predictions by simply comparing the value under open list to the value under closed list. So if I just take the difference between the utility I get in open versus closed list, I mean, intuitively, I can always do under open list what I do under closed list. I can always just vote for a list. So I can do always, at least always as much under open than under closed. So this difference will always be positive. Okay. But more interestingly, what happens here is that once you you actually write down what this term looks like, what you see is that, well, if that's the case, if open is always better than closed, well, there would be cases where I wouldn't vote for any list under closed and I will vote for a list under open, so abstention should decrease. That's my first prediction. There might be cases where I choose to vote for a list because I'm able to erase some candidates. Second, opening the list will benefit lists that have a lot of good candidates, candidates people like, but also a lot of bad candidates. And that's kind of the maybe counterintuitive finding at that point from the model. I mean, that's a very direct implication of this model. You know, because of this term here, you know, if a list has a lot of candidates I dislike, I attach a negative value to, then this term is going to be positive, so this list will benefit a lot from opening the list, you know, from opening the system. And finally, you know, if I attach values that are zero to candidates because I don't know them, then this won't change a lot. But if I'm more sophisticated, well-informed, etc., then this difference should be larger. So the effect should be larger among well-informed and politically sophisticated voters. Okay. So these are my three main predictions. Prediction two is very important because the fact that opening the list is likely to benefit list with bad candidates, bad in the sense candidate people dislike, means that in my context, opening the list might also benefit incumbent corrupt parties because these guys are the ones where I'm expecting to find a lot of bad candidates. Okay. Yes.
When you say they don't like them, are you assuming that they don't like them because they're corrupt?
No, I'm not. So that's very important, and that's my point here, right? I know that people attach value to certain candidates. I'm going to observe what they do. They're going to choose some of them and erase some others. I don't know what their preferences are. I will try to infer their preferences from their behavior and correlate that with some objective characteristic of the candidate, but I'm not assuming. I mean, common wisdom is they should dislike corrupt people, you know, corrupt politicians. But in fact, it's not what I find in the end, you know, at least for a subset of voters. So I'm not assuming that. I'm just saying, okay, they have preferences, they dislike some of these guys, and they're going to vote against them. Okay, so that's just the simple prediction from this model. Now let me show you how we test that. So this is the political context in Paraguay. So as I mentioned at the beginning, Paraguay is a relatively corrupt country, you know, ranks pretty badly in like standard corruption in indices like transparency. It lacks pretty badly in Latin America as well. And it's also, this is another index. So it's that's the first thing, you know. And I've lived there for a long time, and I can confirm that this is actually capturing some reality on the ground. You know, there's a lot of corruption in Paraguay. So next, there was a very long dictatorship from 54 to 89, right-wing, harsh, very harsh dictatorship. And then there are two main parties, the Partido Colorado, or ANL, which was in power ever since 1947, I think, and it's still in power today. So these guys have been in power for more than almost 70 years, with a small exception of 4 years between 2008 and 12. But these guys have been in power forever, and you'll see they still capture half of the electorate more. Then there is a second big party, which is called the Partido Liberal. And then there are a few small emerging parties which run on platforms like Against Corruption and things like that. And we're going to focus on the two main ones in the 2012 election, which are Frente Iguazu, FG, and Partido Democrático Progresista. Okay. So that's the political context. So now here comes Victor Bogado. So Victor Bogado became famous, so he's a member of the Senate. Was elected in 2012, and he became famous because of the Golden Nanny scandal. So at some point in 2011, the Supreme Court released the data on public institution payrolls. So journalists started digging into the payrolls, and they found a lot of people from, you know, having close relatives in the Senate, in the House, and so on, that have their friends, their daughters, their wife, their husband, working in the public sector. This guy was doing particularly well because he had his nanny, quote-unquote, who had a full-time job in the Congress and also a full-time job in the hydroelectric plant called Itaipu, where they're very well paid. I mean, first world type of jobs, you know, very high, well-paid jobs in dollars. So there was a big scandal with this. People were very upset. So Paraguay is not Bolivia, you know. It's not like what happens right now. People go to the street immediately. It's a rather passive country, long dictatorship. But in that case, there was a very strong outburst of people were very upset. So a judge asked to lift the immunity of Victor Bogado, and the Senate voted against it. So 23 out of the 45 Senate members voted against lifting the immunity, and that made things really, really worse. There was a strong outburst of indignation, including marches, you know, a lot of discussion in the media and so on. And in particular, there was a very unusual reaction in the sense that public places like restaurants, theaters, you know, shops and so on, started having cartels saying, we don't want these 23 guys in here. You know, so whenever one of these guys who voted against lifting immunity, and the names were public, you know, they tried to go to a restaurant, he was expelled or she was expelled by the people there, you know, and there were these cartels all around Asunción, the capital of Paraguay. You know, here's a map where you can see all the places where they had this type of public sign saying, we don't want these guys here, etc. Okay, so this is a scandal that had a lot of impact in the
what
opinion.
What party was the Congress?
So that's interesting. I'll come to that in a slide or two. So that's the timeline. Okay, so the Senate vote was here shortly after the election. We did the experiment 2 years later, and then there was another election in 2018. Okay, maybe I should answer your question because not, I saw it was coming up. So the interesting part of this is that actually these 23 people, and I have a picture later, are from both main parties. So it's not like it's not a story of the Colorados only or a story of the Liberals only. It's a story that, you know, it's really the political class. These two main parties, they represent, I think, 70% of the members of the Senate, and they were both involved in this. So it's more the political class than some specific party. I mean, actually, they're both very corrupt. So, you know. Okay. So we're doing this experiment in two places. So in the capital city here in Asunción, we have 1,500 households, a bit more than 1,000 households here in this rural area called Caaguazú, and so we. The experiment involved face-to-face interviews. We trained a team of enumerators with two components, a set of questions, you know, standard survey about our demographics, their perceptions, and etc. And then we have a voting experiment. And this voting experiment involves a randomized section about the information that we provide on the scandal that I just mentioned. And also this vote under closed, alternatively under closed and open list. So it's kind of a 2x2 treatment setting, if you want. Okay, so here's the voting experiment. So we have a booklet with some information that we randomize at the individual level, with some general information that is the same for everybody, treatment and control. And then we have a page related to politics. The control is just some general information on who is a member of the Senate. The treatment is a reminder of the Bogado scandal that I mentioned, and we have two different types of treatment. One is just a standard reminder. The other is a reminder where we also mention the fact that there was this social punishment and this reaction, you know, and in order to see whether this has a different impact. So this is the common part of the booklet, you know, information on a young Paraguayan player that went to play for Barcelona, information on a movie that did very well internationally at the time, and then this is the control. So these are the member of Senate at the time, and this is the information treatment, a reminder of Bogado, and that's the slide I was thinking about. So here are the people who voted to protect him. So you probably cannot see that very well, but you can see here these guys up to here are Colorados. These are kind of close, and these guys here are Liberals. You know? So it's pretty much balance between the two parties. Okay, and that's the information treatment with a social punishment reminder from a famous restaurant in the capital, which also had this cartel saying, we don't want these guys, you know, no son bienvenidos. You know, they're not welcome here. Okay, so, and then people get treated or not, and then we ask them to vote again. So as you asked before, we take the same list that were up for election in the previous election 2 years before. They vote under closed and then open list system. We have them do that in private and put the vote in an envelope. I think here is the bulletin for the closed list election. So we keep only the four main lists. So that's the only difference between the actual vote is that in the actual vote there were like something like 20 lists, but a lot of very small irrelevant ones. Oops, sorry. We keep the four main list and we shorten a little bit the number of candidates because there would be 45 here. All the candidates that were elected in the actual elections are on this form. Okay, so that's the closed one. So it cannot be altered or modified. Lists are closed. You just choose a list, or you abstain, and that's the open one. You can cross the name of the candidates you want to take out of the list. So it says you can just choose one list and then maybe cross a number of candidates. Okay, and we explained this. We have the enumerators explain that in Spanish and Guarani, etc. Okay, so. Okay, so here are the results. I'm wondering if I'm going too fast or I'm probably good. Okay.
No, sorry.
Yeah.
That about that previous slide.
Yeah.
The people who are participating in this sort of experiment, are they the constituents of any of these senators?
Yes. So sure. I should have said that the Senate members are elected on a national list. So there's only one constituency. Okay. So it's not a regional one, unlike the House. The Senate is a national unique list. So everybody got to vote, I mean, if they voted in the previous election, on exactly the same people in the same list. Yeah. Okay, so here are the results where we're going to test the main predictions that I outlined before. So prediction one was, well, opening the list is likely to decrease abstention. And together with that, we think that opening the list is likely to benefit large incumbent corrupt parties, which in this case are the two main parties. Okay. Then the model tells us that the interaction between this system choice, closed versus open, and the information treatment is ambiguous. Okay, because it really depends on what people perceive as the value of candidates, how heterogeneous they are, etc. So I'm not going into the details, but we don't have very clear predictions here. In terms of the last prediction, if you remember the fact that people are more or less sophisticated, we do expect these effects to be larger in the capital city Asunción than in the rural area of Caaguazú. I mean, there's a really large education and information gap in general between the two samples. People in Asunción have much more years of education. They are richer. I mean, it's a very different environment. Okay, and so we expect them to have more information, to be more concerned about politics and so on, possibly. And so these effects should be larger. So here's prediction one: opening the list should decrease abstention, and that's indeed what we see here. Okay, so that's the I'll show you the table, but that's just the graph. The figure version for the control, okay. So you can see that abstention decreases significantly, and more importantly, you can see that opening the list increases the votes in favor of the Colorado Party, and to a lower extent in favor of the Liberal Party, which are the two main parties. And that's a very strong effect. So here we're talking about an 8 percentage point increase in the vote share of the main party. Okay, so they go from something like 48% to 56 or something like that. Okay, and at the same time, you see the support for small parties decreasing. Okay, so opening the list does indeed favor major parties, big parties. Okay. I don't resist temptation to show you, because that's my favorite table. That's despite the fact that people definitely know and they say that they consider these parties to be very corrupt. So here is the perception. So we take voters that tell us in the survey that they voted for the Colorados in 2013 in the actual vote. And we ask them, do you think that this party is corrupt? And the share of people who voted for the Colorados and tell us that they think they are corrupt or very corrupt is 78%. Okay. I mean, that's huge. And same thing for the Liberals. People who voted for the Liberal Party, 83% consider this party to be corrupt. Okay. So they really vote for these parties despite the fact that they know and they consider them to be corrupt. And they do so even more when we open the list, when we give them this opportunity to choose among candidates. Okay. So that's our first result. Here's the table version of it, where we also have interaction with the treatments, the information treatments. So that's the treatment, the basic treatment, and that's the social information treatment. So you can see that, the effect is around 6 0.5% here for the Colorados, 2.5% for the Liberals, negative for small parties, negative for the abstention. There's no strong effect of the treatment. Okay. And that was a surprise for us. I mean, we don't find a strong effect of the information treatment. Yes. I think that's, I skipped that, but that's also in the table, because if you look at this, you know, Colorado voters, they consider the Colorado to be corrupt, but also the Liberals to be corrupt.
Right.
Okay. And conversely, Liberals, so it's a bit higher, and also here, but you these numbers are so high in all cases, and Liberal voters consider the Colorado to be corrupt. So it's like you say, it's a little bit of an order, but all the numbers are high. They're a bit smaller for the new parties, you know. We go from the 80% and plus range to the 50-60% level. But it's still high. I mean, it's still pretty high. So there's still this effect. I mean, they consider politicians overall to be corrupt. They're a bit harsher with the other guys, you know, than their own party. But they're not very, very benevolent with their own party either. Okay, so that's the that's the table version. So, you know, first thing, we really find support, and that's an important result. I mean, it might seem trivial, but you know, that's a really problematic outcome for people who actually claim that opening list is going to be a tool against corruption. Because, you know, in fact, what you're doing here is favoring big parties that are likely to be the most corrupt parties. You know. Now, of course, there are other issues with, you know, how, you know, intra-party competition, how candidates are selected, etc., which are not addressed here. This is the part I skipped in the introduction. But still, you know, I mean, you give almost an 8 percentage point or 6 percentage point advantage to a big corrupt party. I mean, it's not exactly what you want to do when you think about opening the list. So that's our first result. Now, if you look at Asunción versus Caaguazú, so that's the capital city versus the rural area, indeed we expected the effect to be larger there, and that's the case. You know, effects are larger in Asunción, in the capital, whereas in, I can show you, this is the rural area, you see much smaller and sometimes not significant effect. Okay. So it's really also related to how sophisticated voters are, how informed they are. Okay. So these guys in the capital, they're driving the results to a large extent. Now, so now that's the first result, and we call that the between list. You know, how this system choice changes the way people arbitrage over different parties. Now, the other question, which is interesting, is, you know, in terms of preferences, what does it tell us in terms of the preferences of the voters? Okay. So now we can look at what voters do when they cross candidates. So we can go to the voter candidate level for each voter. We can look at what they do in terms of crossing or not each candidate. And so if we open the data like that, we can run a regression where we look at whether voter I crosses candidate J, you know, and we can look at whether this is related to some characteristic of the candidates, but also whether these candidates are involved in the scandal and you know, whether they are corrupt or not, and whether this matters especially for people who were treated. So when we remind people of this involvement, does this change the way they cross the candidates? You know, to say it in a simpler way, if we have shown them the picture where all these guys voted against lifting the immunity of Bogado or even Bogado himself, do they cross Bogado or these guys more often? So that's the question. So we collect a number of characteristics of the candidates. So you know, here I'm really interested in the characteristics. So I could have candidate fixed effect, and I have a specification with candidate fixed effect. I have voter fixed effect. But I'm really interested in the characteristic also of the candidates to see, you know, how they arbitrate, what are their preferences in a way among, in terms of the candidate they choose or they reject. So we have characteristic that include the following: the gender, seniority in Congress, where they were elected for the first time, where they rank, how they rank on the list, whether they were elected or not in 2013. And then we add a number of measures that we intend to validate our corruption measure. So we gather mentions of their name in the main local newspaper in order to see how well known they are, and also whether they are mentioned together with the word corruption in the main local newspaper. Okay. And that, in a sense, allows us to validate our corruption measure, which is the involvement in the scandal. So if I just show you this one. So this is the difference between the exposed and exposed are the ones, the 23, if you want, that voted to protect Bogado. The non-exposed are the other guys. You can see that, in terms of differences, new guys, how was that? So the people who voted to protect Bogado are more likely to have been in Congress for longer, or to not be elected as new Senate member in 2013. And interestingly, we find the correlation with our newspaper corruption measure. You know, that goes in the way we expect. So people that are exposed are also mentioned more often in the newspapers as being corrupt. Okay. And they're also more likely to be active on Facebook, to be active on social media. Okay. So they're more prominent politicians in general, and they're also considered to be more corrupt by the media in general. So we gather all these characteristics, their presence on Facebook and Twitter, and in terms of the exposure. And here's what we find. So this is for the Colorado voters. So people who voted for the Colorado in the open list election, okay? What are the type of candidate that these guys crossed, that they dislike, that they choose to punish? Well, you can see that they punish people that were higher in the list, you know, in the sense that were elected. But that's the very interesting finding here. They actually less likely to punish these guys if they were actually involved in the Bogado scandal. So the people who are on this list of 23 who protected Bogado, if you open the list, they actually get crossed less often than the others. Okay. And then they cross, so that varies a little bit across specification, but in general we tend to find that they cross women more often, so they also dislike women. And they also cross people who have been in Congress for longer, you know, and people who are more exposed on social media. And that still holds if we control for the media corruption scores, if we control for candidates' media corruption scores. Controlling for media corruption scores, they still cross these guys less often. On the other hand, there's no impact of the treatment in this. Okay, so it seems that it's really, well, people have some information, candidates. It's an environment where people have relatively good information in general, and what comes out of the survey and in other questions in the survey. And they tend to cross these guys, these corrupt candidates, less often. If we do that for the Liberal Party, so people who voted for the Liberal Party in the open list system, we find the reverse, the opposite result. Okay, so people tend to cross candidates involved in the Bogado immunity vote more often. That's what comes out here. They also cross women less often. Okay. So there's a significant difference between the voters of the incumbent party and the other main party in that sense. And that's also true controlling here for the corruption score. Okay. Okay, so I don't know if I'm, well, I'm 41, so I should be good. So just to conclude on that, and then I'm happy to answer your question. We started from this idea that is really the basis for the argument that many civil society organizations are making, that it's desirable to give voters a way to punish politicians. So more control over politicians is desirable, and possibly if we could tweak electoral institutions in that way, that would be a good thing. And in general, the literature so far says, okay, that may be true, but then if you give them the tools to punish politicians, then the main bottleneck might be information. Okay. Well, that's actually not what we find in this paper. In fact, what we find is that if you give people more control over politicians, we observe a big, big shift toward large traditional parties, even though people consider these parties to be corrupt. So party loyalty is acting in the sense that as soon as they can erase or punish some of the candidates on the list, it brings people back to voting for the traditional parties, which are also the most corrupt parties. And so that's exactly the contrary to the effect that people are expecting here. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that if we look at the votes, how they choose among the candidates when they are given the opportunity to vote on the open list, we don't find a strong support. So I want to be a bit cautious here, because we at some point we were arguing that, well, people like corrupt politicians, and you know there was a lot of pushback against that. At least we don't find support for the standard argument that, you know, opening the list will be bad for corrupt candidates. In fact, if anything, we find that the voters of the Colorado Party, so the incumbent party, tend to favor candidates that were involved in a recent scandal, and most people were aware of this scandal, even if they were not treated with the information, and we don't find specific effect of the informational treatment. And I mean, there are several clues in the survey that show that the reason for that is that, well, people already know about it. It's pretty fresh. You know, they really know their politicians, and then they're not kind of learning anything when you show them the information or the reminder. So, you know, together these two effects, they kind of reinforce each other. You have the between effect that shows that, well, people shift to the big parties, and the within list effect that shows that within these big parties, they even favor possibly the candidates that are perceived to be more corrupt. Okay, so this doesn't sound like it's a really great idea to open list in this type of context. At least in the case of Paraguay. Of course, I mean, now I want to be a bit cautious again here. I mean, there might be other effects, and there's some of this in the literature. There might be things like, well, maybe if you change the game in this way, then parties are going to select different candidates, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So we can discuss that. But that's at that point, that's where we stand on this question. And thank you very much. And that's the email of my co-author. Me to answer this one and then answer the other one?
Yeah, so
yes,
more
that's exactly that. Maybe I didn't spend a lot of time explaining the intuition, but that's exactly the intuition of them all. Because in the main parties, the big parties, these candidates are known by voters. They generally have been around for a while, they've been elected before, so they have strong views, either positive or negative.
Yeah.
In new parties, most people will be probably closer to zero in the sense that people have less information. And that's exactly what happens. And both tails of the distribution, if you want, make opening the list very favorable to the party, because then you gain a lot from weighting this positive guy more or weighting this negative guy less. So that's exactly the intuition, yes.
Yeah,
but there are other Colorado candidates that are not among the 23. You know? It's not all the Colorado Senate members.
But maybe the ones, is it perhaps that the ones who are on this list of 23, they're especially loyal, so that's why they didn't vote?
Yeah, I mean, that could be that could be a reason. I mean, we tried different things. We tried to really get more information on the candidates. It might be possible. I mean, that's a bit of a black box because, of course, as I mentioned before, we don't observe people's preferences, so it's hard to tell exactly why they pick these guys specifically. That's why I want to be a bit cautious and not maybe say out from people like these guys because they're corrupt. It might be slightly more complex than that.
Thank you. Tony started by saying that this is timely, and maybe it really is, because maybe there's a lesson here for the U.S. Democrats about exposing more corruption inside the White House actually seems to help Donald Trump and increase his popularity with his constituents. So, a very nice experiment, and a really clever research design, and I found it intuitive, and we explained it very, very well. So I had two thoughts. One was about preferences on different dimensions,
mm-hmm.
and the second was about informal institutions. So let me talk about the first one.
Mm-hmm.
So at the moment, in your theoretical logic, the idea is that voters are preferring candidates irrespective of whether they are, because they're corrupt, despite the fact that they're corrupt. So it might be that there are other dimensions, ideological values that these voters prefer, that they rank more highly than they do corruption. So to take the US example again, if you're a Republican, you would still vote for Donald Trump because you think that low taxes and small government are more important than whether you are a philanderer or a corrupt politician.
Mm.
So it's that there are these other preferences that they have that outrank the corruption thing. So it's not because they like or prefer corrupt candidates, it's that they simply value other dimensions or other issues more. That's one thing. And then the second, I don't know the Latin American context, but if this were a sub-Saharan African country, the first thing that you would ask about is about the informal institutions, and particularly about clientelist relationships. So candidates might still be elected by voters even if those candidates are corrupt, because they have ties to those voters, clientelist ties, may not be ethnic in the case of Paraguay, but it might be regional. I don't know whether it's possible to look at whether the 23 senators in this case are from the regions, from Concepción or from the Tule, where you can run the experiment. But the idea is essentially that there might be these informal institutions that are explaining why it is that they're voting for them, even though they are.
Yeah, so I mean, I think the first part of your question, or the first question, relates very much to your point, right? And it's hard to unpack really the preferences. And the second question, in a sense, gives a little bit of an answer. And I was relying much more on a story like that. Just it's anecdotal because I live there and I know the context. But it's absolutely true that there is a strong culture of giving preferences to politicians that are corrupt because of clientelist relationship, vote buying, etc. So that's a very strong tradition, and people admire candidates, like probably some Americans admire Trump, you know, admire candidates that, you know, made it to the top, not maybe in the most legal way, but they're successful, you know, and while being successful, they also help their friends and their relatives and people around them and their network, and that's very strong in the culture. And I mean, that's not at all based on the experiment or the result of the research here, but of course, I mean, just anecdotally from having spent a lot of time there, I would say that very often people actually like corrupt politicians. Mm. So that was my, so now I had to, you know, roll a bit back on that, say, okay, be careful not to mix your own opinion to what the research can really document. But yes, there's an element of that, really. So now the problem is how you document that. This is a national election. So these guys don't have strong regional ties. So it's a bit hard. I would say it's more a symbolic aspect than really, you know. I mean, we Paraguayan voters admire these guys because, you know, they don't care about all these things and they just favor their friends and they, you know, they're successful, etc. We haven't found a way really to convincingly show that document that, you know, people attach positive views to some characteristic of these candidates. I mean, we have this media corruption index that goes in the right direction, and it seems like effectively people favor this. The people have higher media visibility related to corruption. But, you know, again, that's just an anecdotal. Most of these people are in the capital city. I mean, most politicians are clustered
right.
in the capital
right.
city
right.
for the Senate, not for the. That would be different if that was the House. But, yeah.
I mean, as a resident, yes, but then probably as the orange, you know, the might come from other parts, and there might be this sense of distinctive.
I'm not sure we have enough variation there. I haven't looked into that, but my guess is that a large majority is from the capital city. And one of the problem we had, we tried a lot to, you know, understand what happened. Also, this preference for against women, etc. The problem is we have only 23 of them. You know, and once you start looking at, you know, I'm showing you within effect for Colorado voters, that's only 14. Candidates, you know, and you want to do heterogeneity among these 14 again. I mean, we don't have enough variation, so we end up having the effects that are identified out of one or two candidates, and it's not robust. I mean, you cannot really say anything robust in this case.
Yeah, just a quick follow up on that. So, I wonder if it then requires more caution in the policy implication that. Opening up, having more open electoral institutions will not necessarily decrease corruption, because if it is indeed clientelism or clientelist culture, then it is the particular context of Paraguay in which this culture is very strong that's constraining that particular finding. So it might well be that in a different context where you don't have clientelism, will have the predicted threat.
Sure. Oh, I mean, my policy recommendation is really for Paraguay here. What's the motivation? I would be cautious about other contexts. That being said, I think the between party effect is really strong, and I wouldn't be surprised if that holds in other contexts as well. And that alone already is a kind, it raises a red flag in my mind. So, yes. Yes.
So nothing had changed.
No.
So.
Yeah. And not only that, I'll take your question. Not only that, they were still in power. I mean, there was 2 years into the mandate. And then of this 23, I think 19 stood up for re-election and 14 or 15 were re-elected. So these guys get re-elected. I mean, they, no problem. Bogado got re-elected.
So any good publicity is good publicity somehow.
So in the end, 6 months ago, he was finally sentenced, a very light sentence, but he had to leave the Senate. But that took like 6 years or something like that. But that, I mean, that's pretty, I would say it's an exception.
I really like the experiment. It's very interesting. My question relates to the nature of the offence, because kind of on the scale of wickedness, you know, particularly by Paraguayan standards, it's not kind of up there at the top. So you could think of, well, you know, if this guy, I don't know, stolen the funds feeding orphans or something, you know, whether that would have affected the outcome of your experiment. But, you know, so in a society where, as you said, it's one of the most corrupt societies in the world, and voters are expecting this stuff. Well, yeah, it's wickedness, but it's not great kind of wickedness.
You think we're in a corner, kind of corner solution somewhere, somehow?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, do you have a sort of view on how Paraguay got to this situation? Why the context, the framing is corruption is just so pervasive right across society?
I mean, you seem to imply that it's... I kind of insisted on the fact that it's a very corrupt country, also because that, you know, it's a right setup for my paper, but... You know, if you go to neighboring countries, you go to Argentina, I don't think they're doing much better. It's kind of a standard setting in terms of being corrupt. Or I don't know if I got your point exactly. Or
yeah, well, you know, I mean, so if you go back to the original offense, which is putting your nanny on the payroll of Congress and the Hydro Power Company, of course, in Finland, that would just destroy your political career completely.
For much less than that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, you've got to really attain an extremely high level of wickedness, potentially an experiment. So I'm wondering if you can conduct an experiment where you kind of test, as it were, the voters' tolerance for wickedness.
All right, yeah, I see what you mean.
You mean transparent of wickedness.
I mean, there are really, really important cases. We would have to possibly, maybe have information treatment on different cases with different degree. This guy, there's another colleague which had like 3 or 4 people working in his personal land, being paid by Congress. I mean, these things are quite common in a sense in Paraguay. Recently, they find out that the president was dealing with a member of the Bolsonaro family, trying to make a private deal with the energy produced by the hydroelectric firm at the border between Paraguay and Brazil. I mean, there are some really, really large cases that involves like millions of dollars. This case is maybe in terms of the money, maybe it's $10,000 or $15,000 a month. Which is a lot in a country where many people are below the poverty line, but there are bigger cases and there might be smaller ones. I mean, there's all the petty corruption going on. Yeah. I don't know if it's an issue of tolerance, but clearly with this type of thing, there is tolerance. Yes. I don't know if there's an upper limit in terms of tolerance. That would be an interesting question. Because the problem is the size is one thing, but the nature of corruption, you know, also changes a lot. There are a lot of different types of corruption, whether it hurts small people or not, etc. So that's, and tolerance might also be related to that, I guess. But yeah, it's a good point.
One thing that this underlines is again that it's much more difficult to be corrupt liberal than a corrupt, let's say, hardline Republican, maybe not a conservative.
More difficult?
To be a corrupt liberal.
Why?
In a way that then you are viewed as a hypocrite because you are trying to uplift people and, like, you know...
You're in the opposition and still you're corrupt, yeah? I think these guys managed to do that pretty well. I mean, now they have a good reputation of
them. Yeah, but it's just something that beats the vicious cycle. Have a choice between two parties, and both have their drawbacks. universe seems stronger within an extremely corrupt system like this, because they are more corrupt and hence they are more entwined within the, you know, the system itself.
But you can see that voters from the two groups have different expectations. And once your party is in power, I'm not saying that these guys are different in the sense, it's probably not selection, I would say it's probably related to the position of their party. Once your party is in power, you start behaving differently also as a voter. I speculate, I don't have proof of that, but that might be the case. And at some point, because this alternative is not viewed credibly by voters in general, in 2008 there was this election where a former bishop of the Catholic Church was elected with the support of a number of social organizations. I don't know if you heard of that, but there was this guy called Fernando Lugo, and he actually won the presidential election against the Colorados. He was later ousted in a way that was relatively similar to what happened to Dilma Rousseff in Brazil, but you know, he was in power for 4 years. Not the liberals. The liberals would probably never won a presidential election. It's probably held at that point because they're perceived as being as corrupt as the other guys.
Okay, so I think that's done.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much.